Coming to you live from the Jim Butler Ballroom at the Mitzvah Hotel, it's time for another commute with your hosts, Faye and Brenda. This is Drive Time to Nova.
Well, here we are again, Brenda. Everyone, welcome to Drive Time to Nova. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Faye Driver. Can you hear me? Hear me.
I've told Brenda to talk loudly.
I will comply.
Because we're in a new studio. We have a brand new studio. And where should we tell them where we are exactly?
Yes, I think we're in the Naked Boys studio here in Canada.
Right. Fay Manor.
Or the Mirrored Studio.
All right, let's not get too specific.
There's one on the ceiling I find very distressing. Yes,
I like that's my favorite one.
Dirty.
What are you doing in Canada, Brenda?
Well, my visa was reissued. And I was reallowed back over the border, and I'm up in Canada. Faye Driver, you keep track of everything.
Yes.
When was the last time you were in America? I think it is a year and a half.
No, it's not a year.
Yes, because the elections were a year ago in November, and you haven't been here since the election. And I think the last time you were down is when I did my name change, which was in March.
Wow, you're probably right.
Are you checking your data right now?
I could try. I'll try.
Yes. Nobody has darkened the doorsteps of my studio apartment since the rodents. No, I got rid of the rodents in February. So you've been there since then. But I did do my name change in March.
Okay, so let's see. December of 2016, which would be newer or more recent. So it's only been a year. Anyway, you're absolutely right. It's been a long time since I've been in the Americas.
Why is that? Explain it.
Because I don't want to go there with Donald Trump, who's in power. I don't want to spend my Canadian dollars in America because I don't want to support your disgusting country and its leader or any of its businesses, and I don't want anyone to think that I'm in support of anything that's happening in your country at this current time under this current administration. I don't want to be associated to Trump. I don't want any American business or your country to benefit from my tourist dollar.
Okay.
Wait, is that what you were hoping for?
I was glad it wasn't just because I didn't want to see Brenda, my dear close friend.
No, it has nothing to do with that.
Oh, okay.
No, your country has been turned upside down, and I'd rather go to Iraq than the USA.
Wow, that says a lot. I'm wondering, how would you feel if I turned this around and said, Justin Trudeau is just a big crybaby, and I don't ever want to associate and get my cheesies from a Justin Trudeau administration. Now, I'm asking, would that hurt your feelings? What would you, if I said all those same things about your country, would that bother you?
I mean,
because I don't have any control over Trump. I didn't vote for Trump. Actually, the majority of the country didn't vote for Trump. But the Electoral College, once again, bit us in the ass.
Understood. Yeah, I think it would probably be quite distressing. I would feel hurt. But I need to make myself clear. It doesn't really have anything to do with you. The only way that I can participate in your American politics is by registering my own discontent, and the only way I can show that is by not supporting your country in any way I possibly can.
Yeah, there's still plenty of Canadians that come down and spend their monies.
Right.
So that really hasn't changed.
And I've bought some things, too, since Trump came into power from your country. So I'm not entirely, without blame myself, but I just feel strongly. I just can't. It makes me feel very uncomfortable, especially in light of the racial situation that's occurred, the mass shootings. There's a lot of bad things that have happened in the USA in the last year and a half.
I agree. I feel like that with any kind of change, there's always going to be pushback. And with having Obama serve 8 years as our leader, you know, the people, the misogynists, the racists, the backwards thinkers of the United States have been eating crow for 8 years. And you know, and you could tell by the minute that Trump took office that there was a definite shift. Like, all these people came out of the gutter and out of the dredges of society to let everybody know that they haven't been happy for the last 8 years. So with any kind of change, there's always going to be pushback. But I feel like this kind of, not acrimony, is that the right word?
Yeah, it's a good word, yeah.
It's kind of acrimony. It's going to push good people away from being complacent or just being quiet into action. And that could draw us into our first topic, which I want to discuss: all these men of power coming out of the woodwork and being shown the door by all these women who are making accusations. And I want to talk about this a little in depth.
All right. I'm ready.
So, having been privy to kind of the behind-the-scenes life of a lot of gay men and my standings as a card-carrying and straight person.
Right.
I can see a lot of things that are different between a man-woman interaction and a man-man interaction. Now, what I've noticed with a man and man sexual dynamic is that there's a lot of no-nonsense communication. I'm into you, I'm not into you. You can be offended or not, but this is not going to happen, or this, I would like this to happen. There's a much more parallel power struggle there.
It's much
equal. And the way you were raised as boys, even though you...
I was raised as a girl, but go ahead.
Oh. Well, when did you officially switch genders?
No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
So, little boys are raised different than little girls. And little girls traditionally are raised to be compliant, not to make a scene, to show power or reverence to men in power because their daddies, generally speaking, are the head of the household, right?
Yes. Yeah, agreed.
And little girls mostly want the affection of both their parents, but little girls want the affection of their parents or father in a different way than their mother. There is a romanticized idea of what a daddy should be, and most girls aren't privileged enough to have a dad that dotes on them. I think it happens more. But like in my peer group, fathers were like kind of just a presence in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't interact much with you.
Provided the discipline
mm-hmm.
when it was required.
Right. And in my household in particular, it was always a deferment to my dad, you know. Whatever your dad wants. My mom just did not make the big decisions. So... Right.
We'll have to ask your father.
Yep. Wait till your dad gets home. We'll ask him. That was very common. So I say all this to say the fact that I feel like some men, when they hear about women waiting years and years to come out and say, you know, this person was inappropriate to me, I feel like a lot of men think, like, what's the big deal? Like, he touched your ass, you know, get over it. But for women, it's much more of a feeling of helplessness and powerlessness. And there is a rape culture that has become accepted in humankind that is just like, women grow up thinking that rape is a definite possibility in your lifetime. Now, if you've not grown up with that, you don't understand. Like, much like when you were growing up, you felt that you couldn't come out as gay because there'd be repercussions, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So I can't really comprehend what that would be like. You know, I never had to hide my sexuality, right?
Yeah.
So I don't feel like men can comprehend the fact that women, their first reaction a lot of times is compliance. And there is a definite feeling of, did I ask for this? Was I being flirtatious? There is a lot of emphasis put on the woman in a situation where, you know, was she wearing a short skirt? Was she being provocative? You know, men can't control their urges, and boys will be boys, and there's all of this that goes along with that.
Right.
So, I think that this is a good indication that these women are finally feeling strong enough and empowered enough to come up and rise against these men of power and say, listen, this happened. And whether it may not have been rape, but it was inappropriate, and all these men are paying the consequences. Now, I feel like this is an excellent step in the progression of women's rights.
Right. I agree. And I think, I mean, I agree with everything you've said. But let's just say, like, for 80% of the men on the earth, they've grown up in this culture where they're the ultimate power. I think there's a certain segment of men who do not feel that they have the right to do the things that these inappropriate things that other men have done. Okay?
Sure.
So let's just recognize there is a segment of the male population who respect women. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree.
Okay. Now, getting back to the other 80% or 99.5%, I think these men are oblivious. They're oblivious, I think, to what kind of power they have held over women, or women's reluctance to assert their own, you know, rights and individuality. And I think it's great that all these women are coming out now and saying all of this is inappropriate, and we're not going to stand up for it. We're not going to put up with it anymore.
And I also like to point out that people are acting like, oh my God, there's this rise in. And inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace. There's no rise. It's people are being held accountable. I mean, even in my youth, things were said to me that were totally inappropriate, and things were done and implied. And I mean, at the time, if I brought it up, I believe I would just have been told, like, oh, boys will be boys. What are you going to do? It's no big deal. They didn't do anything. And I have to say that my fellow women actually are kind of gaslighted into promoting this attitude of boys will be boys. I can't tell you how many times in my life I've had other women say things that promote the kind of, not agenda, but kind of attitude about how, you know, women have to just expect that men are going to be inappropriate. Like, they're not held to the same standard.
Right.
And I do feel like at some point, in some cases, that women can be overly sensitive. And I don't know that, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes their own past makes them very sensitive to any kind of sexual innuendo. Right. So sometimes I feel like part of me is afraid that too many people are going to come up and it's not going to be legitimate.
Right. So the pendulum is now going to swing And women are going to say, hey, you looked at my butt when I was walking away. I'm slapping you with harassment charge.
Right.
So there's some you think that some women may now be emboldened and may over-report things that may not have been, meant as an affront to their sexuality.
Right. So, like, there's a picture of Al Franken kind of hovering over a woman and pretending, like, to tweak her boobs. And I don't think he actually touched her in this particular case. Now, to me, something like that is just, like, that's just tacky and inappropriate. And I feel like that would be, like, having a conversation with somebody. Like, you can't do that to a coworker. So, I feel like there's different levels of it. So, like, Matt Lauer having a...
Yeah, what did Matt Lauer do? Because I'm not entirely aware of his situation.
So apparently they had a button in his office that could make the door shut and lock from a distance.
Cool.
And one time, I guess he had a dildo. He gave somebody a dildo, a coworker, and said he wanted to play around with her in that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
That is way over the line. I know he cheated on his wife because they were talking about getting a divorce at one time. But, I mean, I didn't know that he was some kind of player.
Pervert.
Pervert. So, I just saw somebody, I'll just say it. I saw Laughing Buddha make a tweet like, our republic was in a state that we may never recover. And I don't feel like that's true. I feel, I'm not, nothing against Laughing Buddha, but I feel like people are kind of starting to feel like that we're in a place where we'll never return. And I feel like this is just the upheaval, the mess that happens before big change.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I wanted to say about right. that.
Now, can I... say, what do you say as a white woman?
White woman?
What do you say to the people who are saying, well, why are you coming out 20 years after the fact and saying so-and-so, you know, fondled your breasts now? Why did you have to wait so long?
Well, women tend to process things slowly. I know I do, and I've heard other people say this. So something can happen to you, and your first instinct might be denial, and you might feel fear of repercussions, of if bringing it to the front. Like, you're always kind of second guessing yourself. Like, did that really happen? There's a lot of that. Did that happen? And then you go home and you think about it objectively, or you tell your friends, and your friends are like, "That's ridiculous. That's crazy that they did that." So, you know, if it's just like two people in a room, too, there's that fear of they won't believe me. You asked for it. There's a lot of, you know, they won't believe me kind of stuff. And there's, you know, people try to put their rational thinking behind things that are much more instinctual and guttural. Like, well, why would he ever risk putting his job on the line? You're not even that good looking. That kind of shit.
Right. Yeah, that's terrible.
So I think there's that too, because people don't believe you. Like, I want to tell you that I could never become a famous person, because once they started digging around in my closet, they would find out that I had been fired from a job for sexual harassment.
Oh, congratulations, Brenda.
And you remember that.
Remind me.
So,
or do you not want to talk about it?
Well, it was just a coworker who actually had brought up an inappropriate subject to me at work.
Oh, yeah, I remember now.
And because I talked about it in a public forum, and she brought proof of it to work, and then I ended up getting fired because somehow I sexually harassed her for asking her not to talk about her masturbation habits. So, so like the way people are and the way they interpret things they find, they could say, here's the fact. Brenda was fired from a job for sexual harassment.
Right.
And no matter how much I explained it away, they would be like, well, the fact still stands, you know, it's right here. Mm-hmm. So
it's like the people who are tagged as they have to be on the sexual predator list because they urinated in public.
Right. Correct. So there's different grades of sexual assault, too. You know, you can have a lower... It's kind of like the murders. You know, there's homicide, there's first-degree murder. You know, did you plan it? Did it just happen? Mm-hmm. Whatever. So... What I guess what I'm getting at is that people, if you do bring up a charge against a very famous person, they can go digging around in your closet, and they might dispute that I even have a right to say, let's say I accused my boss of sexual harassment, and they'd be like, well, you don't have any boundaries. Look at here. You were fired because of this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So and that's all I wanted to say about it. Do you have anything else?
No, but what do you think, like, what is the environment going to be when, like, in another 5 years or 3 years or even less, how do you, what is going to be the status of women and their rights, and how is this all going to play out, do you think?
Well, I think HR departments all over the world are going to be having emergency meetings and writing up policies and no zero tolerance, and there's going to be a big backlash to it. When you bring humans together, whether they're homosexual or heterosexual, pansexual, binary, non-binary, pansexual, whatever, there's a key word in all that, and that's sexual. So you're never going to get away with or away from people being attracted to other people, and sometimes it's not reciprocated. Like 90% of the time, it's usually not like mutual.
Right.
So unless you want to go to a men versus woman's world or whatever, it's always going to be a factor. I just feel like the carte blanche that men have been raised with, like, needs to, you know, mothers need to start raising their boys to be more respectful of their urges. And, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you. There's going to be a whole generation of sensitive new age guys.
Mm-hmm. Right, but the assholes will still get all the girls, right?
That's true.
Okay, do you have any topics you want to talk about?
I can tell you how much I hate my job.
Oh, go ahead.
I hate my new job.
Oh.
But it'll get better.
Why do you hate it?
It's really difficult right now. Primarily, the thing is, this isn't a career that I ever saw for myself. Ever really had any interest in. So all of a sudden I see, you know, here I am, I'm in a position, I know I'm supposed to be grateful that I still have a job and all that, but you know, this is nothing like anything I've ever had any interest in doing. So I feel like when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, and you're looking around for a job, and oh, there's this job available here, I'll go do this. Like, I feel as though I've just taken any old job that I can get in order to survive. And I'm still sort of winding my way into this, and there's a lot to learn. And it's definitely not the hardest job in the world, but it's just a lot of stuff, a lot of activities and things that I'm required to do that it isn't particularly interesting. It's only a little bit fun, and it's just not something I'd ever say, yeah, I want to be this guy. So I'm having some trouble with that. And I think maybe because it's not fun, I like to enjoy the things that I do. And it's not entirely fun right now, and I'm hoping that will get better. And I don't want to sound like a whiny bitch or that I'm ungrateful. But, you know, it's just, it's not all that it's cracked up to be. I'll just say that.
Well, there's a lot of forced socializing going on.
Brother. Now, so, you know, for the last 15 years or so, I haven't been working alone, but, you know, the co-worker interaction for the last 7 or 8 years for me has been pretty minimal. Like, I'll see people for 5 or 10 minutes a day, and then they'll disappear because, you know, that was the nature of the work. Now, we're in this office environment, the water cooler. Everybody can hear everybody's conversation. It's like we basically work in cubicles, and there's 10 people in the office that I work in, and everybody hears everything that everyone talks about. And you can't get away from these people. And sometimes they come into your cubicle, and my cubicle has a tiny little door that only one person can fit through. And then they're in our space, me and my coworker's space. So you get trapped in there with these people, and you can't leave because they're standing in the doorway. Plus, they sneak up on you because my back is turned to the door, and I'm trying to work away, and then someone will go, "Hey!" And it's like, "Wow!" And then I have this one coworker who will sit on the corner of my desk.
Uh-oh.
And she's like less than 2 feet away from me, face to face. And she'll just stay there and talk and talk and talk and talk and keep talking.
Is this your nemesis?
Yes.
Oh, God.
So, yeah.
What is it specifically you don't like about the human race way?
The thing that bugs me is that I'm trying to do stuff. I'm trying to learn my job and do my work and keep myself organized and enter stuff into my computer and do all the computer stuff I need to do. And then these people come in, they just come waltzing into my room, my office, air quotes, office, and start talking and stuff. And they're like, I'm in the middle of something. I'm trying to concentrate here. I'm doing something. And they have no regard for my privacy or workflow ability to concentrate. And everything comes to a grinding halt. And I have to sit there and watch and listen to them tell their story about their kid going to lawn bowling or whatever it is. And it's not even, 80% of the things aren't even work related. If it's a work related issue, I'm happy to talk about it. But, like, I'm working here. I gotta leave the office because I have an appointment, and they're just in your face. Get out of my face!
Do you notice this coming from men, or is this all just your women coworkers?
No, my men coworkers, I think they probably feel the same way as I do. Like, they're like, they don't bother. They're not the social butterflies that the women are. The women do like to talk to each other about things, and all these people have children, so there's a lot of children talk. And I know children are wonderful creatures. At least they must. Apparently, they are, from what I'm told.
Well, I just wanted to share with you that I remember countless times of my ex-husband being in our computer room, and he would have his face towards the door and the screen, so I couldn't see the screen, but he'd be sitting there. And I can't tell you how many times I got dirty looks for coming in and just, you know, saying, "Hey, what did you want to have? How did you want to handle dinner tonight?" Or just something innocuous like that. And just like, I'm in the middle of something, this looked like just to kill. And from what I've understood, that men's brains have a little more hard time shifting from thing to thing, so they can get a little tunnel vision.
Yeah, I can see that.
I've also heard that the reason that is because of the two halves of the brain on a woman are a little more entwined than a man's brain, so a woman can kind of shift back and forth much easier, and they feel like that has a lot to do with being caretakers So, like, if you're a mother, you have to constantly kind of have your eye out on a baby or something. I don't know.
I've heard that, too, and I don't disagree with that. But it has been an interesting experience, and I'm going to keep putting my effort in on learning this job. And we'll have to see. And, of course, everybody at my work comes up to me and says, well, Faye, how do you like working in the office these days? Like, every time. Hey, how are you liking the office? And they all have jokes about the people who work there, that they don't do any work, and there's this reputation that the office people have to defend all the time. Anyway, and I can't, you know, politically, I can't say it fucking sucks and I hate it. So I have to say, oh, yeah, it's been a real challenge. I'm trying to learn a lot of stuff here. It's going pretty good. You know, they're pretty good to us down there. When I'd like to say, I want to pull my hair out and shoot a few people. But, yeah, it's great.
So any job that would be good for you seems like it'd be more of a solitary effort in some respects. Even though you're a dispatcher, you were communicating with other people, but it was always through a device. People weren't up in your face. And you kind of had control in some sense because you were the one that was getting the information and giving it out to the trucks. And then
Plus, you want things to happen quickly. When you're dispatching, I need this thing to be at this fire as quickly as possible. Can you get it done? Yes, I can. Terrific. No, I can't. Okay, I'll find another option. Now I know it's not happening, I'm going to go somewhere else. Now, here, it's like, oh, did you get this report done for me?
Oh, well, let me check. I'll get back to you in a week or so.
That drives me crazy.
So it's everybody else's timetable, and we all know how you feel about having a plan for the day, right? Yes,
absolutely. Not the clock Nazi.
So this is pushing all your buttons, your social, your lack of social control, mm-hmm. Lack of a schedule, lack of being in control in general, and it's just brand new, and change is hard for anybody, right? Right.
I will say, though, I can see on the horizon, I can see there will be more autonomy. I'll be able to do what I want, and I have to learn a few tricks of the trade, and I can see there's ways of being more efficient. And so in some time, I will get into my own routine, my own system, and I think I will be able to enjoy this job. But right now, there just are a lot of challenges.
Yeah. Some days when I'm at my job, and in a situation where I'm around more people, I find that I get a little put out because I'm so used to being in my own head. But then once I kind of give up that bit of control, then I can enjoy the social aspects of it. So it's kind of what you're used to. And, you know, you tend to isolate, as you have mentioned before. And when you isolate yourself, it's so much easier on so many levels.
Yeah, true. There's also another thing. I will say I do have a work buddy that I get to work with, who's my cubicle partner. And I feel very fortunate to be working with them over anybody else who's in that office. So there's still some good things. And we get to work together closely right now. And I'm enjoying working with her. So, yeah, you know, it's not terrible. I don't want to make it out to be terrible. It's just that it's not any kind of a thing that I would go searching for to fulfill any needs in my own career-wise life.
Okay. Well, I have another topic. So I've been doing a lot of knitting. And as I've gone out to the stores in the Christmas season, I see all these hats and scarves and all this knitted stuff that's been mass-produced in other countries and how easily accessible it is. And it got me to thinking, like, as I plug away at making you an Afghan, the value of doing things by hand versus mass production. And I want to talk about that. What are your feelings about that?
Well, there's political ramifications to this mass production stuff. Like, you know, these horror stories of these tiny little Asian fingers building things in, in, you know, India and Singapore and all that kind of stuff. So I often feel guilty about purchasing products that are cheap because we know they've been made probably not under the best environmental conditions, the best worker conditions, not to mention, you know, the value, the payment for you get for being a person with tiny Asian fingers. Like you get paid 1 cent per dingle dangle, that kind of a thing. So there's the political ramifications, and I try to think of them. And so, and I absolutely appreciate a thing that's been made that a caretaker has taken some time and effort to put some energy into building it well. So I always appreciate something that's done well and with care over something that's slapped together, popped out of an extruding machine and shipped in a container back to Canada, you know?
So another part of it that I wanted to talk about was how people are so precious with their time. Everybody always, it seems like nowadays, really over schedules themselves. So you get a lot of weird kind of, I feel like there's just weird judgment that goes along with spending time to make stuff. Not even, you know, like yarn goods, but like making your own food, making a cake. I mean, it just feels like everything has gone you go to the thing that's easiest. So you could take the time and boil potatoes and make potato salad for your potluck, or you could go to the Fred Meyer and get a, you know, something off the shelf that doesn't taste very good usually. But I feel like the more we give away our control over all these little details of life, the less quality of life we feel like we're having, because it feels like we don't get any pride from what we do because we give it away. Everything's got a monetary value.
Right. Take, for instance, you get these grapes. You can get grapes now in the middle of December.
Right.
Because they're flash frozen or whatever. And they're flavorless, rubbery, ugly tasting grapes that barely last long enough for you to get them home into the fridge and onto the table. So there's a quality. Yeah, I got these grapes. They're great. They're from, you know, they're from Chile, and they taste like crap.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm agreeing with you. Is there a conflict here, Brenda? Good podcasting has conflict.
Uh-oh. Should we fight? Point, counterpoint?
Right.
You take the side of mass production, and I'll take the side of doing everything locally sourced. Mm-hmm. See,
but the thing is, though, you know, like you and I have been to these stores where, oh, look at this gorgeous
heirloom tomato
backyard bench.
Oh yeah,
this guy. I built a bench for the backyard. I built it out of a piece of driftwood that washed up on the shore. That'll be $1,200, please.
Ah, yes.
How do you defend that?
It's the Walmart mentality. Like, I still go to Walmart, and I can see that the prices have not changed since the 15 years ago when I started going there, so somebody's paying the price. So it's hard. Like, people want to be paid for their time, but it's hard to put a price tag on something and have people not scoff at it. Like, I can remember, a person in my family who was very good at carpentry, and another family member said, "Would you please build this item for?" It was my dad, and and I'll pay you for it. And they never came up with a figure. And he said he even gave a discount. But this figure was so astronomical to my mother because she's not used to paying these artisan prices. So it's like we've all drank the Kool-Aid. Like, we feel like certain positions deserve money, and certain things that, like, technically, we probably could all learn to make a bench or knit a scarf. This is all, it's like there's no value in these day-to-day items.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And everything's about competition. I feel like...
Well, we live in a free market economy, too. Like, the North America has been absolutely taken over by... demand and supply. I have 60,000 bottles of Coca-Cola. I'm going to sell them for $2.95 each, where we know it costs about 12 cents to make a bottle of Coca-Cola and to deliver it to the store. But it's a market economy. I want my Coca-Cola Zero. So, if you want the Coke Zero, then you're going to have to pay for it. Right. Even though you could buy your own SodaStream machine and some cane sugar syrup and make a beverage that would probably be healthier for you, for probably a lot cheaper than, you know, a bottle of Coke Zero.
Right, and then there's always the person that's willing to undercut, because everybody's been sold on this mentality of. Now, if you take 2 cents away from every one of your hourly employees, by the time the year's ended, you've saved yada yada money. So there's everything. They've really bought into this quantity, you know, nickeling and diming everybody. So if Pepsi wants to sell theirs for $2.70 or $2.85, people like me will come in and go, it's basically the same. I'll save a dime, and over time, that will save me all this money. Where it's this consumerism that drives our culture. Like, I don't remember. I'm really getting to the age where I'm feeling like this conflict of my childhood versus what the modern day world is. I'm feeling like pushing back. Like, all right, enough. Enough with the consumerism. Enough with, like, tell me about the show we watched last night about flipping houses and owning property and having rentals and like that couple.
Yeah, we were watching it was basically a documentary style program about how much money people spend in Canada on housing and what the housing market is like in various locales, at the East Coast, the West Coast, and, you know, places in between, and how Brenda's talking about this one couple who appeared to have 3 or 4 houses that they owned and rented out, and they were living in this gigantic 4,500 square foot or 6,000 square foot home with just 4 people, two adults and 2 children, and they were so consumed with keeping the house upkeep on the house, the pool and the cleaning the pool and mowing, cutting the lawn and doing all this stuff, and they didn't have any time to enjoy their house because they were freaked out because they can't afford the house. They got to pay for all the other mortgages for these rental properties that they have, and the house is too big, and they were like crazy, crazy people.
And she still wanted more. The wife still wanted to get more credit, to have more. That's what I feel like there's no sense of, like, somebody starting up a business and then being able to support their family with their business and just leaving it that. It's always more. Everybody wants more profit, more success. And I feel like that's part of the problem. Like, nobody is allowed to be content with what they have because there's always somebody out there wanting more. And I don't feel like humans... are getting this isn't good for us.
We've lost this, and enough. My pile is big enough. How much money and wealth and stuff, and how many iPhone 10s and Apple Watches do you need to buy to feel good about yourself? You don't. A phone is a phone. It's a functional device. If you can make a phone call and see your text messages, that's all you should really need. Yeah, there has to be a point where people need to say, this is enough. I have enough things. I have enough Porsches. And I'm happy with that now. I don't need any more.
Okay. Well, that's really all I wanted to talk about.
Okay. Well, that was a lovely sermon.
It's Sunday, so time for your Sunday sermon.
I guess if you have anything you'd like to say, you can email us at fayandbrenda@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. And there's a brand new podcast out there called Not Quite a Cat Lady. It's worth a listen if you like personal diary podcasts.
So, thank you for listening. I am the Faye Driver.
I'm Brenda Boo.
And we'll talk to you next time on Drive Time Tonopah.
Meow. That was the car.